On this week's Foreplay, we've got all kinds of good stuff, as we usually do, but it might be even better this week. We've got our interview with Brandel Chamblee. We ask him all kinds of good stuff about his feuds. Does he hate Tiger Woods? You can only find out that answer by listening to this week's show. We've also got a little life hack from our buddy Uncle Chaps, who checks in down from Texas. The boys talk about Bryson DeChambeau finally breaking through winning on the PGA Tour. We also talk about the LPGA's new updated dress code. We give our own picks and talk about a possible scenario in which Phil wins the Open Championship and has to get interviewed by Golf Channel's Jim Bones McKay on the 18th green. But first, we got a little message from our guy, Trent.
Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. Get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It's an awesome life hack and no-brainer choice. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gave you a cheap shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you don't need. And when I use my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving me such a smooth shave. Their Dr. Carver Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave, helps prevent ingrown hairs, and fights razor bumps. You, too, can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razor is just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/4. That's F-O-R-E. That's dollarshaveclub.com/4.
All right, the boys are back. Foreplay presented by Barstool Sports. It's Trent. It's Riggs.
Hello.
Big week. Open Championship week.
Open Championship week, as Padraig Harrington would say.
Open Championship week. We're off the British Open thing. We're on the Open Championship. Not because we want to listen to all of the, you know, European Ryder Cup types, because we are now friends with Padraig Harrington, and he told us to call it the Open.
Best friends with Padraig Harrington.
We have on this week's show Brandel Chamblee of Golf Channel, maybe the top golf analyst in the game. He is a little bit of a polarizing figure.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, like to call him a bit of a know-it-all. He's gotten in feuds with everybody. We talked about all of this. He was awesome having him in.
This is the funny thing about Brandel is the biggest digs at him are that he knows everything.
Right.
And that he's very smart and very prepared. And people, like, I guess it's like making fun of the nerds in high school.
100%.
And then they eventually become extremely successful and they are better than all of us.
It's like being upset at the kid that answers every question in class and answers them right.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, you learned that when you were in middle school and high school, you thought that was lame. And in real life, that's actually sick.
Brandel Chamblee is Revenge of the Nerds come to life. And he's a super cool guy. He's not a nerd at all.
Crazy, down to earth, chatty. He was up for all of our shenanigans. If you guys are listening to this now, the video is probably up where Trent got to do something that I'm sure many, many people have wanted to do.
It felt so good. I got to look him right in the face and tell him to fuck off.
Which was very funny. We preview the British. Oh, God damn it. The Open Championship. I did, in my defense, I said I'm going to slip, but that I mean to call it the Open Championship.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, it's going to take a while to get that out of your system. You got to go Open Championship.
It's going to take a while to iron it out, so luckily we're here to do it on this big podcast. That's where we iron
it
out.
And the thing about Brandel is, well, he showed up early. He showed up about a half an hour early.
Yep.
Luckily, we were prepared for him.
Huge shout out to us for being ready early.
I didn't want to pat ourselves on the back too much, but it was an early interview to begin with, and he showed up a half an hour early, and you and I had already been here for about an hour preparing for
him. That was maybe one of the biggest upsets in the history of this podcast.
And why I bring that up is it was early, and Brandel was already on and already firing and doing things. I mean, he probably made a few stops before us, but he was already on his game, ready to rumble.
He was ready to rock. He bumped into the into Sunshine in the elevator. So,
oh, Braveheart.
There's all kinds of good stuff. It's our longest interview by far. We talked for damn near an hour. Could have talked for an hour or two more.
Mm-hmm.
So do not miss that. Maybe our best stuff yet. He is incredibly prepared. We talk about how and why he's that prepared, what it takes. I had a big weekend. I was up in Newport.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, but a bunch of our, basically like half our company goes to Newport every weekend.
I guess so. Newport is the place to be. I've never been, but that's where everybody goes.
I was up there for what we call the Golf Weekend Classic, which is a very dumb name on the surface.
Wait, what was it?
The Golf Weekend Classic.
Okay. That's fucking ridiculous.
Now, the way that
you
it came
about...
You are
a creative blogger. You have a creative mind.
No, this has nothing to do with me.
Okay.
So, this trip is about... This is like 6 or 7 years old. This was the official fifth year of it, since it kind of took form into a real thing.
Yep.
And what happened is this group of guys who I became buddies with, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, they had amongst their crew, like mostly college buddies, some high school buddies, amongst their crew, they had a boys' golf weekend and a boys' ski weekend every year.
Okay.
So the golf weekend was just like they would get like 6 guys together and they would just, whoever could make it, they would just go away and play golf for a weekend and they just call it golf weekend. Okay. However, it took, it solidified as a real thing with teams and captains and all of that. My roommate Lurch, who's been referenced on this podcast many times.
A lot.
The big, you know, 6'5", 250-pound Lurch, who moves very well
he
at the bar.
He's a fucking ballerina.
He's a ballerina at the bar, a big body, wears it well. Anyway, he's the captain of our squad. We are now 5-0.
Wow.
We won 12-6 in an absolute dusting this year. Felt good. But I was up in Newport for that, and like I said, it has a very dumb name on the surface. It is a dumb name.
I still stand by that.
I don't know why they didn't just change that.
They should.
But I kind of respect it, because it looks so stupid in all of our gear. It just says the Golf Weekend Classic. But it feels good to be a champ for the fifth year straight.
This is my question, because I saw a bunch of your Insta stories, and you were all about content,
yep.
Even though you were on a boys' trip. You are with more people than I would even consider like close friends. So like, what's the dynamic between you and everyone else? I know you kind of just explained it, where like you are on a team with your close buddies. How well do you know the other like 20 guys that are there?
Pretty well, but I'm one of the more towards the outsider type group. So like I said, the core group all went to either college or high school together.
Yeah.
And then once they expanded it, you know, once you have like 1 year where you have like 8-on-8 for whatever reason, like 16 guys can show up, then you never want to shrink.
Sure.
So what you get is like every year, 4 or 5 guys from the previous year can't make it. So you find guys to fill that spot.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden you get a year where everybody can fucking make it. And now we're at a point where it's 12 against 12. I know most of the guys really well. You know, there's probably a handful that I've only hung out with like this weekend every year.
Mm-hmm.
But in this type of thing, we do 24 dudes in a house. It's a big-ass house with all kinds of beds, couches. You get shit-faced. You can kind of just sleep anywhere. It doesn't really matter. But you kind of, you know, you have those moments where, like, when you drink with someone all day, they're just like your best friend.
Your best
friend.
Well, right. What you're basically explaining is a bachelor party.
Yes,
because there are,
exactly.
Every time a bachelor party gets together, there's the core group that knew each other in high school.
Yep.
There's the people who met them in college. And then there maybe is a couple, like, work friends that they got with. Nobody really knows each other all that well.
Yes.
But as soon as you start drinking all day together, everyone, they're your brothers.
And the difference is that this is basically, like, the fifth straight year of that bachelor party.
Gotcha.
With, like, the cohesiveness of Golf Ryder Cup type vibe that kind of even makes you a little bit closer.
Okay.
So don't get me wrong. There are a handful of guys I don't really know that well. But still, like, if we got in a fight, I feel like he would be, like, on me, have my back instantly, even though I've only hung out a couple times. I did not get hit by a golf cart.
Okay, that's a good update.
Huge win for me.
Did you at any point feel like you might get hit by a golf cart?
Yeah, so on Saturday, it's the 2-on-2 match. We do Sunday singles, you know, Saturday, 4-ball, and... my thinking was like, if we close out this match and they really have nothing to play for in the last couple holes and we're just driving around, they might be upset and hit me.
Yep.
And we won on 17. We won. So we played the 18th hole with nothing at stake. So I thought at that moment, like, they might just run me over because the round's already over.
Yeah.
And I had a really good round going, so I was taking the hole pretty seriously. I ended up shooting a 76, which the only reason I say that is because I've sucked balls all year.
Yeah.
My handicap went from like a 3. I'm up to like almost a 7 now. So it feels good. Only the second time I broke 80 all year, which is good because when you tell everyone in the whole world how good and how great you are and then you suck dick, it's bad. So shout out to me for that.
And everyone at this tournament, everyone at this get-together knew about the bounty, yes?
Oh, yeah, everybody knew. And, like, the teams at this point have evolved to where, you know, we have our own intense email lists.
Yeah.
So rumor was their email list went nuts when that bounty went up. Like, we're going to just kill Riggs, basically. But they didn't. Nobody hit me. I did have 2 guys that showed up to be my bodyguards on Saturday, apparently. They said they were like in the parking lot. I was in front of the clubhouse looking for them all around the carts. We had this absurd thing where we had the tee times from 7 a.m. until like 7:50, which, and the course was an hour away, so we had to leave at 5:30-ish, 5:45.
I did see an Insta story of you at like 5:45 in the morning in a car.
It was insane.
That's no fun.
So when we got there, we were kind of in a daze, but I looked for these guys. They said they were there. Shout out to those guys for showing up. I Venmo'd them a couple bucks because I was like, get drinks on me. You showed up at 7 a.m. apparently. So I did have plenty of bodyguard offers. It's also risky that if you bring in a bodyguard, that person might just be looking for an easy chance to run you over and collect $1,000.
The person you don't know, that's the best chance they can get.
So it was a weird weekend. I will say that I heavily underestimated how kind of likely it would be or how alert I would be on the golf course with my head on a swivel.
Yeah.
Like 99% of the time I could have just gotten hit and like I wasn't paying attention.
Let me ask you this. So what are your feelings when you get over the ball? Are you thinking about it?
I didn't even think about it once.
Think about it once.
No.
That's shocking.
I really
didn't. Because that was your biggest concern was Dave has now ripped golf away from me, but it sounds like it wasn't that big of a deal.
I honestly didn't even think about it once. I don't know if it's because it was so early and I was still in like some weird combination of hungover, drunken stupor from the night before. I really don't know, but it didn't really cross my mind. It crossed my mind a little bit more yesterday because we played Sunday afternoon. You know, it was a beautiful day. The course a little bit more wide open. The course we played on Saturday, you know, it was kind of like cloudy and it's very tight and tree lined. Like if someone else came with a golf cart, it would be very noticeable.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense.
So, you know, it went fine. I got out of it without getting killed. Last night I did get home very late, which it always makes you regret everything when you get home. You're grinding, you're traveling like 4 hours. But the beauty of it is when I got home, I didn't have to worry about ordering food because I had a little Blue Apron. If you're not experiencing Blue Apron, you're basically just an idiot. Blue Apron is incredibly affordable. Less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. They got incredible variety. They got incredible flexibility. It's very easy. I'm an idiot. I really don't know how to cook at all.
Like, same.
Not I'm even close.
Terrible cook.
And they make it very, very easy for me. So shout out to Blue Apron for that. If you are not using Blue Apron, you basically would have been in a position last night where I would have had no other choice but to probably spend $30 or $40 trying to order food at 1 a.m.
Easily that much money.
Which would have sucked and been very stupid. Luckily, I'm not stupid. I'm very smart. I use Blue Apron. You should, too. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/foreplay. That's blueapron.com/foreplay. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. That's blueapron.com/foreplay. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now, next up, we have something very unique. We've had him on the show before, but our buddy Uncle Chaps from Zero Blog 30 fame, who's gotten back into golf heavily.
Heavily. He says he's got golf brain where he can't turn it off. All he does is think about golf, thinks about his swing, thinks about his equipment. He texts us all the time, just things that are going on in his head about golf.
Nonstop. He's got all kinds of devices. He's basically got like a whole Michael Breed shop going on in his house and in his brain about the golf life. He's got a new life hack, golf life hack, that he wants to tell everybody about. Here is our friend Uncle Chaps.
Hey friends, your best friend Uncle Chaps here with a little golf hack. When you get done with your golf game, at any course that you're at, make sure that you know where the gas stations are that have the walk-in cooler. Because as soon as you hit the 18th, you down your little beer, you get your ass in your car while you're still sweaty, really, really hot in your car. Go to the gas station place with the walk-in cooler. Hang out. I hang out in there for like 10 minutes, cool off. I'm feeling right as rain. The gas station attendant doesn't love it, but fuck him and fuck anybody that doesn't do this little life hack. Send me pictures. I want to see pictures of you guys in the cooler. Later. Life hack.
Classic Chaps, always thinking outside the box.
That's him, baby.
He's just a smart guy. You know, he's our Marine. He just knows and understands and identifies shit that other people don't.
It's true. And I was actually just talking to Nate about this. There is something to be said for the blogger who gets to just sit by himself and doesn't have to come to an office every day.
Yep.
That's been the biggest change for me. When I went home back to Iowa a couple weeks ago, I did not realize how much I take for granted quiet, peace and quiet. Because when you work in an office, it's so much different.
It is very
different. That's really obvious to say,
yep,
but it's so true, especially in the blog life.
You people don't understand how cool our lives used to be. They might look cool now. How much they used to be when we just sat in our boxers all day.
And I sound like an asshole because I begged to come to New York. I fucking begged to come to New York, and I'm happy I'm here. But you do realize when you get back home, you're like, the old life where I was just in peace and quiet. I wrote like 8 blogs a day when I was back home.
Right,
I can write
just
like
cranking.
I can write like 4 in the office, and there's balls flying over my head.
And the big thing of a blog, once you've started a blog in your head, it's really hard to get out of it and then come back into it. You need to just finish it. It might take an hour. It might take 10 minutes. You never know. But you got to just finish it. Otherwise, it never fucking gets done.
Yeah.
And in your house, you basically ignore everything else. There's really not that much to ignore. You're in the new blog. You crank it. It's done. You do another one. Here, it's like you got 11 distractions. You got YP grabbing you. What about this drama? Dave pulls you onto the radio. Some hot chick walks through that you can't even believe is real.
Yeah.
You're like, what's going on there?
Ice Cube's walking through. Michael Rappaport's walking through. We're making it sound like it's hell, but... Sometimes it is
a hell we're describing here. You might
Eric Nardini's texting you at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's crazy. Sunshine might be running into Brandel Chambly in the elevator.
That was really funny.
So it's nuts, but we're grinding. We're getting through it. We got the office life. That's why we're in the studio. That's why we're able to crank this podcast. This past weekend we had on the tour, Trent's an event very emotional for Trent.
John Deere Classic, the 5th major.
John Deere Classic. I was pretty much plugged out, not plugged in at all to the golf yesterday. I had my own shit to worry about. But our guy, Bryson DeChambeau.
He won. And I did not think he was going to win because at a certain point, Patrick Rogers had a 2-shot lead over the field. Mm. And he had about 5 holes left. I was like, just hold that and you're golden. And then, of course... It did not turn out that way. And our guy, DeChambeau, he had a 30 on the back 9.
Yeah, he had a heroic birdie on 18, too. That hole is brutal.
Fist pumping everything. I did not think this day was going to come, and if I did think it was going to, it wasn't going to be this soon, and I did not think it was going to be at the John Deere Classic, the tournament I hold so near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts.
Yeah, when you really shit on a guy for, the first 6 months of your podcast existence, and then he just wins right in your face, especially when he wins in Trent's backyard at the John Deere Classic, it stings a little bit. I do want to say our big gripe with DeChambeau has been that he gets all of this hype and all this media attention like he is a big winner on tour, and he was having a dog shit year when we started shitting on him.
At a certain point, he missed 8 cuts in a row.
And he was all over the map. He was kind of bitching at the USGA and at this and that. And he was still getting all the coverage. And he's got all of his weird quirks.
Yeah,
so we were like, fuck Bryson DeChambeau. Now he's won. Almost, it's a little spin zone. We might have like motivated him.
Yeah, he's probably a four-play. He's probably a platron. And he's ready to, this is his victory lap.
The reverse four-play curse continues.
It's true.
Yeah, the guys that we shit on win. I won't say that the Tiger thing worked because he got a DWI, I think, like the next day.
It's not foolproof.
It's not 100%.
Poulter almost won the Scottish Open, too.
Yeah, so it could have been a double whammy for us this past weekend.
I might have just, quit. I might have not done the podcast. This is the thing about Bryson DeChambeau, and you alluded to it, Riggs.
Yep.
If you go back and listen to at least my rants against DeChambeau, it is. It's about his, all his irons are the same. Like, he wears a funny hat. Oh, he loves the physics. He analyzes the game in this way, just like it's different from everybody else. I hated all that coverage. He's got commercials during tournaments.
That's
on Saturdays. On Saturdays and Sundays when he doesn't make the cut, and I'm watching Bryson DeChambeau commercials. He hadn't won on the PGA Tour yet.
Yeah, that was like the West Coast swing. I have that. Like stained into my brain that image of us watching those stupid commercials over and over again when he's not even in the tournament.
It was like those
he got
Rory,
knocked out of the tournament.
It was like those Rory living in the Hall of Fame commercials. But now that he's so, I'm not gonna say I'm happy that Bryson DeChambeau won because I shit on him forever because I think he's quirky and weird.
No, we're gonna spin this into it's good for us that he won and we're happy.
Okay, fine. Because yeah. I guess so. I've been an arch nemesis of mine. He got a win. It's going to be harder for me to shit on him now because he's a winner. He's going to the Open Championship now. He won himself. He cashed his ticket or whatever, so he's headed over there. We're going to be hearing from Bryson DeChambeau, and that sucks.
Yeah, we're big put up or shut up guys, and he put up. So good for him. I do want to say it was kind of a bummer, Patrick Rogers, because we've had like a handful of his friends being like, you got to get him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a little bit of a stoolie. So I was pulling for him. He had a kind of brutal, he bogeyed, what is it, the 17th?
He bogeyed
17. Which is a par 5.
Yeah.
And then almost hold out his chip for birdie on 18 to get into a playoff. Kind of a tough finish, especially for a guy. I think he won 11 times in college, which tied Tiger's record when he was at Stanford. So he knows how to win. You would have thought he would have closed that out after how well he was playing. He buried a couple long putts in the back nine. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of pulling for him. That was a bummer.
There was a whole – the leaderboard was pretty good. It was Steve Stricker. It was Zach Johnson, Wesley Bryan. I mean, Stricker and Johnson, those are two guys you're going to see on the John Deere Classic leaderboard every single year.
Stricker just won't go away in general. Huh? He plays like five times a year, and he's always in the mix.
He loves the John Deere Classic. That's and amazing. I was really hoping for the fairy tale win for Zach to get another win there, but it went to Bryson DeChambeau. I still – a little part of me can't believe it.
So – We're big Lady Golf guys.
Huge.
Huge LPGA guys. Always have been. Friends of the game, friends of the sport. We had a couple developments. First of all, a girl, Danielle Kang, missed the cut down in Bedminster, Trump's course in the U.S. Open. I'm kind of happy about it because I was out of town this past weekend, and it would have been a huge – I would have had a little bit of a black eye on my love for Danielle Kang if she was right down the street from where I live. And I couldn't be there to watch her win the U.S. Open.
Yeah,
kind of pumped she missed the cut. That was smart. A little spin zone there. We also had a little drama with LPGA dress code updates.
Yeah, so the dress code came out. Weird timing. Middle of the season, they decided to put out a much stricter dress code. Hold on. I'm going to pull it up here if you want to. Do you have any reaction to it so far?
Yeah, I think it sucks.
Yeah.
I just think that it, you know, you need more. You need as much attention on the game as you can get. And I don't think this is the right way to do it. I wasn't like seeing any crazy risque outfits.
And here's a couple of the ones that stood out to me when this is an email sent out to everybody in the LPGA, and it starts today. This next tournament, this is when all these are being enforced.
Okay.
Plunging necklines are not allowed. Leggings, unless under a skirt or shorts, are not allowed. Length of skirt, skort, or shorts, that's really hard to say, must be long enough not to see your bottom area. We're talking about butts, folks.
Butts.
At any time, standing or bent over. Appropriate attire
bent
should
over,
be...
Bent over, classic sex joke.
I laughed a little bit.
Yeah, you kind of laughed unprompted there. You just read it, and just your instant reaction was to giggle.
That's me being 8 years old at all times. I read bent over and was like...
Very nice.
Appropriate attire should be worn at pro-am parties. You should be dressing yourself to present a professional image.
So someone's showing up a little slutty to the pro-am party.
I guess dressy jeans are allowed, but cutoffs or jeans with holes are not allowed. Joggers are not allowed. And this is funny. Workout gear and jeans... not allowed inside the ropes. It's weird for a governing body of an athletic event to outlaw athletic clothing.
Yeah, that seems like it's probably not the right way to go.
And Michelle Wee wears like everything on this list.
Yeah, it's like that's exclusive. She's going to have to just drop her whole wardrobe, start over.
I don't know what it is. And
that's one of the big appeals of Michelle Wee. She's got a great body. She she rocks clothes that make her body look great. What's wrong with that? Very marketable.
And I believe it was our friend Ashley Mayo from Golf Digest who said, what did she say? It just doesn't make any sense. This whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's in the middle of the season. Why now? Like, what happened?
Yeah, we need to know what happened. It's got to be some kind of interesting story in there. But I think we're all pretty universally against this.
Yes. It says joggers are not allowed. Can you imagine them, the PGA Tour, telling Ricky or Rory to be like, no, you can't wear joggers?
Yeah, how about their dress code is like stricter than the men?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It seems a little counterintuitive.
Yeah, so we don't have all the answers on this, but all I know is that a governing body of golf just completely like could have embraced the next generation of young women coming up wearing athletic, like, what do they got here, leggings, and they're like, no.
We're very pro-women here.
Progressive company.
Tough to see when this progressive pro-women podcast to see this type of discrimination against certain outfits.
It's true.
Sad. Anyways, we got up next the much-anticipated chat with Brandel Chambly. We've got in there a lot of Open Championship talk. So we're going to let that do more of the previewing than just Trent and I talking about it alone because we got one of the best analysts in the game. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Brandel Chambly. All right. We are now joined in studio by the one and only Brandel Chambly from Golf Channel. Brandel, what were your first thoughts when you hopped in the elevator and saw our guy Sunshine?
I thought that he looked like Braveheart. I thought we were going to paint our faces today, grab some swords, and go out and kill something and show it to everybody on a stick or something.
That's our producer.
He's an impressive man.
He is. He really brings it. That's kind of what the vibe we were going for.
He's good at his job, but we also hired him for the hair because it's a distinct feature.
I totally understand that. You know, I get a lot of crap for my hair, but you know, I've got no shot at competing with this man.
Trent and I are a little low, so we had to hire a guy that really could bring us up, bring our average up a little bit. All right, so we've got about a week until Open Championship. There's a lot to talk about, but we're going to start off. Rules have been kind of all over the place lately. Most recently, Jon Rahm over at the Irish Open. first of all, kind of talk us through what happened and your thoughts on how the RNA handled the whole thing.
Well, I thought it was a bad ruling. It was handled improperly. I'm remiss. I almost feel bad. I got to start by saying, you know, this is not on John Rahm, because, you know, the minute you start talking about this ruling, you know, it turns into you're criticizing John Rahm.
Right.
Not doing that. Not doing that at all. Okay. John Rahm made a mistake in the heat of the moment. He made a mistake. He mismarked his golf ball. He clearly mismarked it. The rules official, Andy McPhee, said he, you know, it looked like it was millimeters, but it was inches.
Right.
You know?
It
wasn't millimeters. It was inches. I mean, we're all metrically challenged over here, but if you actually know what a millimeter is,
right.
I mean, that's like three sheets of paper.
Right.
And this was inches. And it was clear and obvious. And he was five up, and there were five and a half holes to go, basically. If he had been penalized two, which is what he should have been, all of a sudden, he's only got a three-shot lead. And a three-shot lead is surmountable if you're a chaser. So
right.
I thought it was bad.
And we saw the effect that, you know, that kind of news had on Lexi Thompson. So you don't know, with the three-shot lead instead of five and he just gets horrible news, you don't know how that's going to affect him. You don't know how that's going to change the championship.
Well, no. The dynamic of the event should have changed. You know, the minute he got that penalty, all of a sudden, how does he deal with adversity? Mm-hmm. And he's only got a three-shot lead now, not a five-shot lead. And Daniel M., who was playing in his group, you almost got the feeling that Daniel M. didn't feel like he could go over and impress upon the situation that a penalty had incurred. He was listening to the explanation, and he walked away as if, you know, everything's okay here.
Right.
And when you see, and when I saw John Rahm walking away, I mean, listen, I'm in a room, you know, like that. I've got, you know, 300 people around. They know golf inside and out. They know the rules.
Right.
I mean, in the golf channel, I mean, these people know golf like you cannot imagine.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, it's a penalty, no big. You know, obviously he's going to get his two. It's all good.
Not a big deal.
When he walks away and he's smiling, he's like, well, I've never seen anybody get two shots and look that happy about it. And then you find out he didn't get the shots.
Right. You're
like, well, you got to be kidding me. It must be incredibly hard to administer rules correctly. Because, you know, what the USGA did last year at the U.S. Open was, you know, colossal mistake.
Right.
Then what they did at the U.S. Women's Open was slightly less than colossal, but it was on its way to colossal.
Right.
And then, okay, I will say that the LPGA got it right with Lexi Thompson. I mean, that was a correct ruling. What she did, she used to get DQ'd for that. I mean, you used to get DQ'd for that.
Yeah.
So she didn't get that. She got exactly what she should have gotten, mm-hmm. four-shot penalty. That was correct. So, okay, we're one to the good. But now we're heading in the wrong direction with this one.
So do you look at these events as, you know, every time these happen, you get everyone comes up and says, these are what's killing the game. It's really tough to grow the game with these types of events. Do you look at these as huge black eyes for golf? Do you think it really doesn't matter? Because I feel like a lot of people know that the rules of golf are pretty complicated.
Well, you know, in theory, you'd think rules should be simple, right? Henry Longhurst, one of my favorite, old guy, you know, nobody, stuffy guy. He said the rules of golf should be written on the back of a matchbox. Anything more than that, and they're complicated. Well, that sounds good in theory,
right.
But there's an infinite number of scenarios that unfold, you know.
Yep.
A snake curls around your golf ball and then pushes it in. I mean, it's just, you know, crazy. But no, I don't think it's a black eye for golf. What you get a lot, because, you know, because of social media, these get into other areas of sports where breaking rules is, you know, just how you play the game.
Right.
You know, if you can get away with a foul,
absolutely,
or you can get away with holding, you do it. And understandably so. But in golf, you know, we don't have rules officials that police every single player. You're meant to police yourself. So, you know, they're at odds with the game, the way the game's meant to be played. So, you know, it is confusing to people. They're like, get out of here. He only moved it an inch. Big deal. No penalty.
But
you know golf.
Right,
and you
yeah.
know that very soon someone will get sloppy and purposely move it away from an imperfection.
Yeah.
In front
I've got buddies that'll do the
exactly.
old mark in front
exactly.
and then mark behind,
exactly.
pick up a couple inches there.
Yeah, and there are some people in the history of the game, but not many. But I could, you know, on another show or with a different drink in our hands, I could tell you, you know, five or ten guys.
Totally off the record.
We got any beer in the house, Sunshine, that we could grab for Brandel?
I mean, there are definitely people in the game that have a reputation for, you know, playing a little light and loose with the rules. Mm-hmm. But the game, it's not many of them. And this, you know, look, it's complicated. And if our audience grows and gets bigger, In time, they'll get this. You know, one of the difficulties, though, is that every shot's, you know, being covered now.
Right.
And we got high def, and we zoom in, and hell, I'd be nervous, too, if I was out there.
Oh,
playing.
Yeah. Like, and it's true. You know, when you mark the ball, technically, I think it was Patty or somebody who said this, is technically when you remark your ball, you're never actually putting it in the exact same spot. It's like impossible. So it's like at what point, you know, with all the technology, it just becomes really tricky. And so I guess, like, where do you think – what would be your recommendation? Where do you go to avoid these – because if it continues like it is, they're just going to continue to happen no matter what.
Well, they happen every week, you know, and typically, you know, listen, on the PGA Tour, you know, you have rules officials out there that are doing it every single week, and they don't have too many controversies on the PGA Tour. They really don't.
Right.
And they don't generally have that many controversies on the European Tour. It's when you get into other events where they're not doing it every single week, you tend to have bigger controversies. But when you say you can't put the ball in the exact same spot when you mark it, right, but you know and I know if you put it in a spot right in front of your coin in the same relationship to the coin, okay, maybe it's a blade of grass off here or there, but that's fine with me.
Right.
But you know the difference between that. If somebody marks it, you know, a half an inch forward, you know it.
Oh, yeah.
One time Jack Nicklaus, early on in his career, was paired with somebody who was notorious for mismarking his golf ball. And on the very first hole, this fellow was marking his golf ball, and Jack was standing about a foot away from where he was marking his golf ball. And the guy looked up at Jack, and Jack goes, "You see my shoes?" And the guy goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "You're going to see them every time you mark your golf ball today." And I mean, that's how golf deals with these sorts of issues.
Right.
Typically, did you hear Phil Mickelson at the Masters when he said, I think he was asked the question about Lexi. And he didn't want to answer it, so diplomatically, Phil goes, "I'm not going to talk."
Phil, no way.
Right. Like, I'm not going to get into the Lexi, but
yeah,
I on tour, you know, I like to see this dealt with by the players, you know, where we put pressure on whoever's, you know, because he goes, there are players out here, a handful of them, that play a little fast and loose with marking their golf ball.
Right.
And there's pressure. You know it. All the players know who these guys are, and they'll go up and they'll say something. They'll say something to the rules official. So typically it's handled sort of within the locker room, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's tough out there because if you've got a couple guys like that, I mean, it's at the point now where golf, there's so much money at stake that guys almost, you know, if the guy's committed to that in his brain, or, you know, I grew up playing hockey and the coach used to tell us, if there's a scrum around the net and you're jamming, just put your arms up in the air. And you'll confuse the ref, and he'll be like, "Well, if they're celebrating, you might get lucky one time," and the ref just calls it a goal.
That's right.
And it's the same type of vibe where, like, you kind of snake it till you make it. And if you grow up with that mentality in other sports, and people transition over, I feel like a lot of people that golf's trying to convert kind of look at it as, like you said, a little bit of like, "Well, he just picked up like an inch on the green. Like, who cares?" So I feel like that kind of gets lost in translation when you're trying to grow.
Oh,
the game.
It definitely gets lost in translation, no question. And you know, that's what we have Ricky Fowler for,
right?
You know, that's what we have Jordan Spieth for. I mean, these young guys that are coming up, you know, Justin Thomas. What I mean, these young guys coming up, they are definitely attracting younger, hipper audience. I mean, you're right. I mean, they are.
Right.
I mean, and they're coming to the game and they're going, "Oh, wait, what? You know, just hang on, just watch a little while, and you'll get it.
Right.
You know, sooner or later, you get it. You know, when you first start playing, you don't play by the rules. You don't really tee off where the markers are supposed to be.
Right.
You don't count every shot.
Yep.
You know, you shoot. What'd you shoot? I don't know, about 100. You know, but yeah, you know, but the better you get, the more you pay attention to the
rules. It was a loose 100. You know,
right. You know,
I had fun. That's what counts.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, hang in there. The better you get, the more important the rules come. And then when you get in competition, you know, the one thing that I'll hear and the one criticism, and I wish they would do away with the phone in. You know, calls. I really did. Those things are annoying.
Those are just dog shit.
It's just stop it.
Right.
You know, I mean, stop it. I mean, you have a rules official look at it. And I wish that, look, when a round's done, it should be official. Now, okay, the tournament's still going on, but round one, 25% of this event is done. It's in the books. Then 50%. It's in the book. We can't go back and amend it. Sorry it happened. We'll do better next time.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that would happen. That would stop a lot of the controversies. It really would. But, you know, I mean, we're going to have these controversies every single week. They're not going away.
Right.
And the one thing I hear is that it's not fair that the player that's in the hunt is scrutinized more than the player who's not in contention.
Playing for 70.
I'm like, okay, maybe it's not fair, but for that inconvenience of the scrutiny, you're lauded. You have, you know, lavish attention.
You're going to make a lot of
money.
Huge
sponsors.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, you're going to get a $1.8 million check at the end of the week. So what would you rather have, intense scrutiny or anonymity?
Or indifference.
Or indifference. It's like, I'll take the scrutiny. Yeah. All right, zoom in, watch me march this golf ball. I'm going to do the best I can. At the end of the week, you're going to pay me $1 million.
Right, and it's at the end
I'll
of the,
take the scrutiny.
At the end of the day, like, what the hell are we arguing about here?
Right,
like,
right. I'll take the scrutiny.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, these guys got rules. I mean, all you have, these rules officials are the best guys, and they're, I mean, you know, you snap your fingers, and they're right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. And you're like, listen, you know, the seagull picked my ball up, but dropped it in the guy's beer cup. He drank the beer, took the golf ball, and walked away. What the hell do I do?
Right.
You know, it's like, well, you know, what color was the seagull? You know, I mean, it's like off they go, you know, I mean.
And the rules guys, the last thing in the world they want is anything to happen. Like if they go through the whole week and they don't have to, you know, put a ruling on anything or become a part of any story, that's an ideal week.
That's exactly right. You know, we're not, nobody's hoping for this. When this John Rahm thing unfolded, everybody was like, oh, are you kidding me? Could we just have one? You know, people will start tweeting, you guys love this stuff because, you know, it's kind of like, no, not at all.
No.
Because I know the second we go on TV and, you know, the first question asked is, what about the ruling? It's not, what about John Rahm just winning by six? It's, what about the ruling? So you talk about the ruling, and then what ends up being in a headline is, Brandle says John Rahm has no integrity. And it's like, I never said that.
Like, what the hell is going
That's
on?
That's not even Brandle. Brandle hates John Rahm so much. Said John Rahm will never win again. This just in. And it's like, give me a break. I said the integrity of the event was challenged, brought into question. Nothing about John Rahm, for crying out loud. John Rahm, I'm a huge John Rahm fan. He's amazing.
Do you have that in the back of your mind at all when you're making comments about a certain situation, about how is this going to be portrayed in the blogosphere, on Twitter, and stuff like that?
A little. But, you just, you know, you do your job. You know, you're like, listen, what would I'm just going to be fearless. I'm going to say what I'd say. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, you're not criticizing the person. You know, basically, we're just talking about golf. You know, I don't deal with, once they leave the golf course, I don't care what they're doing. You know,
right.
I mean, they could be best friends with sheep. I don't care. You know, whatever they're doing is fine with me when they leave the golf course. So I'm not criticizing the person. I'm just criticizing the golf. And I'm like, you know, if people take that the wrong way and they get mad at me, I'm like, well, what did I say?
Right.
Well, was it right or was it wrong? You know, and if it's wrong, I apologize. I'll correct it.
Yep.
But if it was right, I'm sorry. That's my job, you know, and I'm meant to give my opinion. You know, it's just my opinion.
That's
right. I could be wrong, you know.
I have been often,
you know.
Whoa.
So speaking of controversies, let's get into a couple of your feuds. I feel like there's this, for whatever reason, there's this narrative out there that Brandle Chamblee, like, hates Tiger Woods. It was 2013 was the F incident and all of that. How do you feel about that now that it's been, you know,
you know, if
four
I
years.
Had that to do over again, I probably wouldn't do it quite that way. You know, my son is a political science major. He's a good writer. He had the best line on that whole bit. He was like, you know, when I was telling him about how it was all going, was, you know, what was he, he's 20 now, so, you know, he was 16 then, and he said, yeah, I hear you, Dad, and I see the video, and it looks like, you know, things weren't, you know, quite on par there.
Right.
But, you know, if you'd have said it a little more diplomatically, people would have really just listened, and the message would have been more about what he did.
A little more Phil Mickelson-like.
And less about, yeah, so less about, you know, you calling him out. And that's, you know, that's ideal. You know, so yeah, I mean, would I like to do that one over? Yeah, probably a little bit. But I mean, the fact remains that, you know, I saw the video and we came up on the air and I thought, I've never seen, you know, this kind of video. So I felt like it needed, you know, a strong opinion. I gave it. And, you know, you live in live TV, you know, those kind of things happen.
And it's a lot of what we were talking about earlier, too, where it's tough because, you know, 95% of you know, the analysis you've given on Tiger Woods is praising him for his incredible play.
Yeah, I feel like it is. You know, when people love to say I hate Tiger Woods, like, A, I played against Tiger Woods and I would stop and watch him because, you know, it's the 500-year flood. It's, you know, you're playing against Babe Ruth and, you know, you're going to watch. And it's just the most amazing, graceful display of athleticism you'll ever see. So I appreciated that. And then in television, he made my job so easy because he would just hand deliver you, you know, these amazing highlights and this yep. unbelievable journey to this great story. So, but when I saw him change his body, and when his body began to change, when he began to mess around with his golf swing, that's about when I got into TV. So it sort of coincided with him really changing his golf swing. So pretty much the entire time I've been on TV, I've been talking about him, in my opinion, ruining the greatest body in the history of the game and ruining the greatest swing maybe in the history of the game and stalling the greatest trajectory in the history of the game. I mean, all any athlete wants is great success, right? Mm-hmm. You want to dominate. And you want consistency. Well, this guy dominated like nobody had ever dominated. He won four majors in a row, won them by 8, 15, 12, 8, and he made 142 cuts in a row. So why would anybody ever change that technique?
Right.
And so, you know, to see that, and you're on TV, and you just see it, and he's come out, and he's got a different body and a different golf swing. And then, you know, 2 seconds later, like, Brandon, what do you think? And I'm like, well, I have no idea why someone would do that. And, you know, that becomes the thing, because every single week he'd be asked, you're changing your swing again? You know, you're bigger, you know? And,
right.
And what do you think about that? And, you know, so it's, you know, and the whole world wants to talk about it. So I end up talking about it.
So when he inevitably makes another comeback attempt, what would Brandel Chamblee need to see from his swing that would make you say, oh, I like this. This is what I want to see.
Well, first, I'd need to see a more sinewy Tiger Woods.
Right.
You know, if he were thinner up top, and then he might have a chance to
like 2000.
Yes, exactly. You know, when the biceps weren't ripping the shirt, you know, when the shirt was covering up the biceps, you know, he needs to be more sinewy. You know, when I see other golfers trying to emulate the body that he had, I think, you'd need to be fit for sure. You need to work out. But why would you want to emulate a body that broke down at 34? I mean, broke down like nobody in the history of golf has ever broken down. So, you know, I'd need him to be thinner. And then if he were thinner, he'd have a chance at swinging longer. And if he were swinging longer, he'd have a chance at swinging more upright. And if he were more upright, he'd have a chance of having a more languid sort of transition, a slower transition. I mean, rhythm is so important. His golf swing had gotten so flat, so quick, so short. And that all bleeds into every other part of your golf game. You end up playing a very quick, fast game with no rhythm. And that's not who Tiger Woods was, you know.
And you've been pretty vocal that you're a little concerned guys like Rory might be going down the same path.
Yeah, you know, look, I love Rory. I'm a 55-year-old man. You know, Rory's 26, 7, 8, 28 or something.
You're looking good, though.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, not as good as, you know, Matt over
well,
here.
Well, sunshine's you know, really.
Everybody
it.
Pales yeah. in comparison.
He takes it to another level. Yeah. But I'm surprised we could get Matt away from the women even to get in here. But
he's fighting them off to get into the office.
But you know, listen, I'm an old man trying to tell Rory – listen, you know, I know you idolize Tiger and Jason Day. You guys idolize Tiger. But they're having injuries that are not consistent with the game of golf. Their injuries are more consistent with lifting bulk weight. And to be having those injuries in your 20s, when golf is about longevity, golf, to do the things that Rory can do and probably wants to do, and Jason the same, you need to have a 20, 25-year career. And they're doing things off the golf course that are closing the window and making it more narrow and injuring themselves, in my opinion. And I just want to say, you know, listen, I want to watch Rory play for 20, 30 years. And I love the guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's one of, if not the best thing about golf right now.
Totally.
Is
we agree.
Rory.
We're huge Rory guys.
I mean, I love him. Anytime he's in the media, he's honest, he's sincere, he's nice, he's classy, his golf swing's beautiful. I mean, the guy can't be any nicer.
Right.
Can't be any better guy. He'll make a mistake. He'll go right in the media center. He'll correct it. He's forthright. He's got opinions. You know what he said about the Olympics? He came back and said, I wished I hadn't said it.
Mm-hmm. Which most guys wouldn't have done.
Most guys wouldn't have
stubborn.
Done. And didn't say it with any hint of chip on his shoulder.
Right.
You know, actually, honestly, and when he played with Donald Trump, I don't know. Did you guys read the message that he tweeted out? I mean, yeah. It was just so well written and thoughtful.
Right.
And I just thought, gosh, you know, how do you not pull for this?
100%.
Right. And you know, I had tweeted something earlier in the year about, you know, how most players on tour hit down. You know, this is geeky stuff, right? It's real geeky stuff. But they mostly kind of hit on the downswing with their driver.
And he fired back
and
pretty hard.
And he fired back, and he goes, I hit up. And of course you do. I hit up on the ball. You know, right. I try to hit it high as I can. Jack try to hit it high. It's like most long hitters hit it up. You know, they hit it high. But most try to hit it down because they try to hit it. You know, if you're hitting down on it, you're going to hit it straight. Watch guys in the baseball on-deck circle. Mm-hmm. Okay, watch them. When they're making practice swings, the angle of the bat is always down. Okay, that, you know, I mean, because the minute you transition, it shallows out. So anyway, he shouts back at me on Twitter that I hit up on it. I mean, I think he put a smiley face on there or something. You know, I mean, I know.
Might have been a winky face.
Or something. I mean, I think he did. But I, you know, and so it's funny, you know, then he comes on our set at the match play, right? And I'm on the set. Now, the year before, I had said something about him working out, and I was concerned, and he came on our set at the match play. So he's right down there doing his thing. I'm down doing my thing. And then when he finished, I'm busy. I'm looking at my computer. I'm getting ready for the next segment. I'm not looking at him. And next thing you know, I feel him right behind me, and he taps me on the back. And I turn around and go, hey, Roy. And he goes, hey, I was just fucking with you, you know?
Right.
He was like, you know, that's what we do, you know, on Twitter. Because he was like, you know, he posted on Twitter when I said something about him working out, of him bench pressing.
Right. Right.
He showed, he was like, you know, how's this look to
you? Then all the golf blogs are like, oh, eviscerated.
Yeah, right. Ooh, down. You did it. You know,
yeah, delete your account.
You know, he's got, what, 3 million for me? I don't know how many. And I, you know, and I mean, I had 50,000, you show Brandon. You know, it's like, ooh, black guy, you know, just the whole thing. And I went on TV the next day after that, and I started the show by, you know, curling two big cans of hairspray.
Yep.
I was like, you know, I was having fun with it because I like Roy.
Right, yeah.
And I thought he was just having fun with me, but I was like, I hope he didn't take that the wrong way, because I couched what I said with every single caveat there was, like, it hasn't really hurt him yet, and he's, you know, he's still playing well, and you know, I couched it with caveats,
right.
But I was like, I wish he didn't get this big, you know. So anyway, he goes, I was just messing with you, that's what we do, right? And I was like, yeah, okay, very nice, you know, he's a nice guy. So mm-hmm. Anyway, here we are a year later, and now I've said something about him hitting up on it, or he thinks I've said that, you know, you got to hit down on it. He goes, I hit 5 degrees up on it, and blah blah blah, and he sent it back to me, and I can't remember what I tweeted back to him, but anyway, right before that week was Bay Hill, and he had a 381 yard drive, you know, just left a vapor trail down, no wind, right? He cut the corner 9 at Bay Hill, 381,
which is a ridiculous drive.
It's
over those trees.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Right? And his club head speed was 125. I looked it up, and I noticed that he hit 5-6 degrees up on it, right? So, and then the next day, I'm doing the show. He does his bit. I'm doing my bit. And he comes again right over. And he's, you know, he says, hi. And I go, hey, I just noticed that you hit, you know, 5-6 degrees up on that drive on 9 yesterday. And it's great to see that you're finally taking my advice. And it's already helping you, you know. And and he laughed. And you know, he he's a good dude.
Yes.
He's just the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, you know, my business is every 2 minutes someone turns to me and says, why do you do that? What do you do that? What do you like? Mm-hmm. You know, is that a good swing? Is that a bad swing? Is that going to win? Is he going to win 10 majors or 9? And, you know, you're invariably going to say, well, maybe, no, yes. And somebody's going to get pissed and
about something.
You know, and then it's going to turn into a headline. And then they stirs up controversy. And a lot of these players will just read the headlines.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what everybody does.
Right. They read the headlines. And then they, you know, what you said could be misrepresented in a headline. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, you're held accountable for the headline. I woke up this morning, I hit my phone, and it said, you know, Chambly takes shot at John Rahm. And that was, you know, I don't know who wrote that, but I was like, I never took a shot at John Rahm.
Right.
But John Rahm, if he reads that, he's like, well, that son of a bitch. You know, I'm not talking to him.
He's going to be tapping on your shoulder, and it's not going to be friendly.
Right. No. And John Rahm is,
he's,
you know,
huge.
He could give Will a run for his money. I mean, I'd that's a Braveheart scene I'd watch, you know. So anyway, next time I see John Rahm, he'll probably scowl at me. It's like, all right, whatever.
So along the same lines, but getting almost kind of from the opposite viewpoint, I read an article, I think it was a blog a couple months ago about you kind of wrote about why does nobody teach Jack Nicklaus's swing? And I went kind of down the rabbit hole, and I was like, well, that's a great point. And, you know, I think you talked about how in 1980 at the age 40, you know, he led in total driving. You know, he would win two majors, go on to win in 86 as a 46-year-old.
Right.
Why does nobody teach Jack Nicklaus's swing?
They don't, because they just don't understand that, you know, in the 70s, 80s, you know, what happens is the people that end up teaching golf, it used to be that great players would leave the tour and then they'd go to clubs and teach the game. Well, right. Now great players don't do that. They never leave the tour. They go to the championship and they don't teach anymore. So the people that end up teaching the game are people that have just read about it mostly, and it's just mostly theories. And somewhere in there, they'll read or did read that Ben Hogan said he resisted with his lower body to build up tension. Okay, so that Hogan wrote that.
Okay.
Okay, he didn't do it, but he wrote it. And then a couple of teachers read that, and they thought, yeah, that was Hogan's secret.
That's good stuff.
He resisted with the lower body, so I'm going to start teaching that to all my
students.
That
sounds good, too.
Right. And so, I mean, Hogan had this appeal. I mean, even now, if you write a book on Hogan, it'll sell. Okay? It's like writing a book on Kennedy.
Yep.
It's right. Going to sell. Mm-hmm. Okay? He still holds that mystique and that power in the game of golf. So he holds that power over teachers. So he said that. Two or three or four teachers started teaching in the 70s. Then 400 taught it in the 80s. They all taught it in the 90s, and they're still teaching it now. And meanwhile, I can show you video because I have categorized every single year of Ben Hogan, and he didn't do that. He turned his lower body. He lifted his lead heel, and he did it from the time he was, let's see, in 1940, he was 28. So he did it from the time he was 28 till as long as he could. Mm-hmm. So he didn't do that at all, and nor did any of the greatest players until recently. And now then you see almost everybody resisting with their lower body because they've all been taught this, not by players. You know, if Jack Nicklaus taught golf, if he had left and gone and taught golf,
right,
Jack Nicklaus would have taught players to turn their hips, lift their lead heel. If Tom Watson had gone and taught golf, by the way, Tom Watson at 59 almost won the Open Championship. I mean, much less of the player that he was in his 30s, but this is a guy that lifts his lead heel in this generation, and by, you know, age standards, beats the tar out of these players. So why wouldn't you do it? If you want longevity, why would you resist with your lower body, build up tension in your back, and cause injuries? I think a lot of the injuries that Jason Day is experiencing are from resisting with his lower body. To some extent, I think Rory's are too.
And you look at Phil, and Phil's still looking pretty flexible out there.
There you go. And Davis Love. Davis Love won an event on the PGA Tour at 51. He was in contention last week at 53. Phil Mickelson will win more events. He's 47. What do you want? Do you want a 6-7 year career on the PGA Tour or a 10-year career? Or do you want a 30-year career? Last year, Phil, I mean, I wrote this book. It came out, I believe, in March of last year, right before the Masters. And in the book, I say many times, why don't players swing like this? Okay. In April, Phil goes into the media center at the Masters and goes, why don't players swing like this? And right. I'm like, I think you took the words right out of my mouth, or maybe right out of my book.
Right.
But yes, exactly. You know, Phil Mickelson, I don't put his golf swing anywhere in my book. Like, nowhere is his golf swing in my book, because it's just, you know, it makes no sense at all. It's off plane. It's all over the place. It's not, it even starts down off plane, which is no great players.
Right.
I mean, it all makes sense starting down. It may look like crap going back, but halfway down, it's on plane. His isn't. And this guy somehow hits the he hits it amazing.
Right.
But he does it because he's got this long, and he's got time to create. So,
right.
I mean, what his overall golf swing absolutely is the model of what I advocate. You know, if you look at the positions, you know, he's like a over-caffeinated, you know, conductor in an orchestra. You don't know what the hell he's doing. But yes, so Phil is spot on there.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Justin Thomas, if I'm Jason Day, if I'm Rory McIlroy, if I'm Jordan Spieth, if I'm these players, I'm figuring out how to have – Dustin Johnson does this, by the way, and he blows it by these guys. Bubba Watson does this. He blows it by these guys. I'm figuring out how to extend my right leg, if you're a right-handed golfer, get my right hip higher, lift my you know, get my left knee behind the ball, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine you guys got baseball players around here. Here's Lenny Dykstra. Okay, so imagine a baseball player, great hitter, you know, with all the potential to hit a home run. Imagine if somebody said to him, all right, when you're setting up, okay, when you're in the batter's box, I want you to keep a wide stance, and when you go to make sort of your backswing to hit, please don't let that left foot come off the ground. Right? Keep them centered. Don't turn your hips, because that'll build up tension, and you'll hit it further. Right? He would hit it. He wouldn't even get it to the outfit.
Right.
Okay? But what do? They lift that lead leg. They get it back by their right leg. They've turned their hips as much as they can, and they hit it 500 feet. Because that's how you hit powerful shots. And what if the pitcher were told, hey, listen, when you're going to throw this ball, keep your front foot planted, okay, and don't stride back or anything like that. Keep it planted, because you're going to build up tension, more tension. He would throw it 60 miles an hour,
right,
and he'd hit the batter.
Yep.
It's like, but somehow these great golfers have been taught this load of crap. And they've bought it, hook, line, and sinker.
Randall, you should have seen me go to the range that night after I read that article, and I was just trying to lift my left heel all day.
It was quite the
well, there's,
scene at
there's
the
more
range.
To it than just lifting.
No, that's
that.
All yeah, I took away from it. That's all I had. I was like, I'm ready to go.
You probably look like Justin Timberlake out there. Sexy back.
It was quite the scene on the range. Yeah, I was
well,
like,
send me some video. Tweet that stuff. I want to see it. I want to see it. All right, I'll give you a lesson via Twitter. I want to see it.
Oh, yeah. We can put those on Twitter.
Get
we're
that
pretty
stuff
active out there.
I want to see it.
Oh, what is this? Is this a break in the middle of an interview? Wow. This break is brought to you by our friends at 18 Birdies. Golf is awesome, as you know. It's probably why you're listening to this podcast. And the free 18 Birdies app makes it even awesomer. 18 Birdies is the most complete golf app out there. It really is. I actually used it this last weekend for both of my rounds. They've got the incredible GPS that shows you all of the holes, your distances, what it looks like from above, bird's eye view. Helps you a lot out there. The 18 Birdies app tracks all your stats. It's packed with tools to improve your game. Like I just mentioned, the powerful GPS. You always know exactly where you are, what your distances are to the green. 18 Birdies also rewards you just for playing golf, no matter how good or bad you are. That's because every time you score your round on the app, you can enter the 18 Birdies Dream Games Challenge, where they're giving away thousands of dollars in instant prizes like balls, clubs, and greens fees. We love all those things. Those aren't even the big prizes. Every month, they're also giving away once-in-a-lifetime golf experiences, things that people like you and me would never get to do, like winning one of 12 spots at the Arnold Palmer Invitational Pro-Am at the world-renowned Bay Hill course in Orlando, Florida. Imagine playing one of the best courses in the world alongside some of the top PGA Tour pros in the world. Now, a little lawyer speak, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Restrictions apply. See official rules at 18birdies.com/dreamgames. Download 18 Birdies today and make your phone the best club in your bag. So let's talk. We're about a week out from the Open Championship. You guys, Golf Channel, NBC, you're going to be covering it very heavily. What, you know, Trent and I were talking beforehand, you got to be probably the most well-prepared person maybe in the world, but definitely in golf. What does your prep look like for a big week, like, you know, heading over, covering the Open Championship?
Yeah, it looks like I'm, you know, writing the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
You know, I've got notepads everywhere. I start typically for a major, I'll start about a month out, and I'm going back and looking at pretty much every major for the last 20 years, or every, you know, open or whatever the major is that I'm looking at. And I'm looking at everything, you know, who hit it the furthest, who hit it the straightest, who was the best on the par threes, best fours, fives, what were the wind conditions like. You know, when I first started in this job, you could just go to PGA Tour stats.
Right.
Right. And there was, you know, you, and I did it, and I did a lot of work, and, but that was it. Now then there's a million sites. And I go to them all, you know. I go to them all, and I basically, you know, I end up. And when you get to a major, the Open's a little different because more players can win the Open than pretty much any other major. But every other major.
Why is that? Why do you think?
Well, because experience plays a huge part in it. Crosswinds require a lot more talent, and that typically comes with older players. Rational sort of level-headedness comes into it because you get bad breaks, and then the greens are slower. And because the greens are slower, those older nerves are better. So that's why Tom Watson almost wins and Greg Norman wins. And last year, it's Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson are, you know, they're blowing the field away. Well, they're over 40, and their nerves aren't that great. You know, excuse me, Phil's a pretty darn good putter.
Yeah.
But Henrik Stenson's never been a good putter on fast greens, mm-hmm. and he shows up there, and all of a sudden they've got a great chance. And, you know, I mean, Phil's more sanguine about bad breaks and all that. So I joke that, you know, golf is like the athletic equivalent of the movie Night at the Museum, you know, or the Open Championship is, because all the dinosaurs come alive, right? And they've got a chance right. for their one last hurrah. And that's essentially what we saw last year. It was like Night at the Museum. It's like, right. you know, the T-Rexes were loose and they're chasing all the little people. And, you know, so... You know, that's what's great about the Open. You get there and these young kids still got a chance. They're awesome. And the older guys do. But anyway, I look at all that and then I put it on a spreadsheet. I'll tell you one funny story about that last year. But I put it on a spreadsheet and I put it down and I look at it and then I preen out about 10 people that probably have a chance. And then I'll preen out 5 and then I'll boil it down to 1 or 2.
You have to send me that spreadsheet.
Last year at the Masters. And I do it typically for the top 50 players in the world. It takes me about a day per player, okay. Basically, to do everything I need to do to say, I can sit here and off the cuff tell you who I think. But the goal is to know, right? The goal is to answer the question, why? Why is this guy a better pick? Why is Justin Thomas a better pick than Jordan Spieth at this event?
And is it numbers that's telling you that?
It's numbers. It's current form. It's, you know, can he hit in crosswinds? Does he putt well in fast greens? Does he putt well in slow greens? Is he a good bunker player? Is he good out of the rough?
But to find the answers to those, are you using numbers or are you kind of
Well, you use numbers, then you connect dots. And then, you know, that's one of the things that upsets people, you know, with analysts. The what is easy. You know, what did they do? What did they shoot? You know, what did they win? Those are easy. Everybody knows those. It's the why that pisses people off. They're mm-hmm. like, well, how do you know why? And it's like, because I care. Because I look. Because I think about it.
It's my job. That's what I do.
I played the game professionally pretty damn good right. for a long period of time. I know why. And I look. And, you know, and you look. You're just giving your best guess, mm-hmm. you know. But last year at the Masters, so I put the 50 players out there, right? And Danny Willett was ranked 12th in the world. The European Tour website is a little harder to get numbers from. You can get numbers from everywhere else, but, you know. And so I go 1 through 10, and I get, for whatever reason, I got on, and where I was at, the website didn't work that day. The internet didn't work, so I skipped Danny Willett, and I just kept going, and I went all the way down and did all the top 50 except for 12. Danny Willett was the only one I didn't do. Mm-hmm. I had some peripheral numbers on him, some decent numbers on him, but all these other numbers I had. Drive up to the Masters. I get in there and, you know, do all the shows, the lead-in show. Who's your favorite? You know, who do you like? Blah, blah, this, that, or the other. Pick what I pick. Do the whole thing. And all of a sudden, you know, by Friday, Danny Willett's playing pretty well. And I'm like, well, how did I miss Danny Willett? How did I miss? I got to go back and look at my notes. How did I miss that? I go back and I look at him. Well, son of a bitch. He's the only one in the top 50 I didn't do. And I was like, you know, that'll teach you. The one, right. you know, is like, you know, and so you can't, you know, in the top 20, you can't, you got to know. You got to know everything.
Right.
And to know everything, you got to work your butt off. And I do. And it's, you know, look, it's fun for me to get up there when someone says, why is Henrik Stenson a good bet this week? Or why isn't he? You know, you got to have an answer, you know, and you're just selling it. And you know, it's what I do.
So Royal Birkdale heading back for the 10th time, you know, first of all, how much do you rely on the past research that you did? How much are you, you know, starting fresh? What's that process look like?
Well, you do go back and look at, you know, who's played well at Royal Birkdale. And, you know, so the last one was Padraig Harrington.
Right.
Right. Padraig Harrington is not a long hitter. Okay. And statistically, maybe the worst ball striker in the last 15 years in golf. I mean, every year, 180 in ball striking, 170, 190 the next. I mean, it's just awful. Okay. But
tell us how you really feel.
Phenomenal wedge player. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the best you'll ever see. I mean, he's always up there in precision with wedges. Good putter and a phenomenal attitude. And that's kind of what Mark O'Meara was. And he won there in 1998. Kind of what Ian Baker Finch was. He won there in 1991.
Okay.
You know, before that, the game's changed so much. So you can go back and go Arnold Palmer won there and Peter Thompson right. won there and Tom Watson won there and so forth. But, you know, you need to look more recent And then you look at the past Open Championships, and then you look at the weather forecast, and then you look at the current play. Like Sergio Garcia, every year, the Open Championship is his best major. I mean, the Masters is pretty good for him too, because he can draw the ball so wonderfully. But the Open, because the greens are slower, and you know they're just a little nicer to guys right. who aren't great putters. And you know he's got a phenomenal record at the Open. Now, he just won the Masters, you know, and here's the weird part about it. If he hadn't just won the Masters, I'd probably make him my favorite to win the Open. But you wonder, you know, and he just won a couple weeks ago, and you wonder, it's like, okay, is he over the euphoria? You know, is he going to get past that? Is right. there a complacency that sets in? That's what made Tiger Woods so unbelievable, is that he would win, and there would be no euphoric letdown. There would be none of that. He would just come back the next event, and yep. it was like, by God, that is in the past. I am going to kick your ass. And he would.
Which most guys don't have.
Right. No, they don't. And understandably, I mean, they win and there's euphoria. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I mean, they build a big house on the hill overlooking the ocean, and then they're gay. They're not quite as good. Right. You know, they're just not quite as good the next year or the next year. They're just, and then, you know, after a while when their banker says, hey, listen, you're doing okay, but, you know, we kind of got to get rid of the yacht, you know? It'd help. And right. then they start playing better.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you're like, where have they been the last couple of years? Right. It's like, oh, you know, they've been on a big hill overlooking the ocean, you know, with brown out. Water and crystal glasses. And I get it. I enjoy that. You
right.
know,
who doesn't?
But to be, that's, again, Jack was not, I mean, of course they were motivated by money. You know, Tiger was motivated by money. But it was about beating people more than money for Tiger and Jack. And you know, that's rare. You know,
right.
that is rare. I mean, that's why they do what they do. Tom Watson was pretty much the same thing. He wanted to rip your throat out. And, you know, I just want to see that again in golf. Okay, those are generally not the best guys to have dinner with. Okay. Okay. You
yep.
know,
yes.
you know what I mean? The guy that's nice and, you know, sitting and inviting everybody for the barbecue of the house and look at all this fun I had and you want to take a ride on my private jet and all that. That's a fun guy.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's not going to win back-to-back majors very often.
Right.
You know, Padraig Harrington is the guy he's not at all motivated by money. He wants to win. But the thing about Padraig Harrington is he's just not very athletic. And that's crazy to say, right? He's athletic yeah. compared to the normal person.
There's
right.
there's your headline for anybody that wants to blog.
That's right.
The only thing we're taking away from this.
Padraig Harrington.
Right, right, right.
Hates it.
Right,
right, right. This is all in relevance, you know, in relation to his other athletes. He's not as athletic as they are.
Right.
And he's nowhere near the ball striker that Brooks Koepka is. But, and I said this about Padraig Harrington the other day. I said, look, Tommy Bolt is one of the greatest players that you ever saw. That's okay for you listening. He won the U.S. Open in 58. I mean, he was lauded as a great ball striker. Tom Weisskopf, terrible temper. Tom Weisskopf, good friend of mine, loved the guy, but he could get hot. Unbelievable temper. I mean, unbelievable talent, okay, but only one major, okay? Fred Couples, one of the best players you ever see, right? Unbelievably talented, one major. Davis Love, unbelievably talented, one major. Here comes Padraig Harrington with none of the talent that those players have. None. Okay? All he is hard work, piss and vinegar, and persistence, and a great attitude. And he wins three majors.
Right.
He wins the equal number of majors of Weisskopf, Couples, and Love. Okay? That's how important attitude is. So, you know, I was always reluctant to pick a Sergio Garcia to win majors or to, you know, because you're like, attitude really matters.
How do you, on your, you know, your spreadsheets and all your stuff, how do you factor that in?
You do. There are intangibles. There's one, you know, there's the bounce back stat. But then I always go back and I look at when a guy gets within five shots of the lead on the weekend, how does he do? When he makes a bogey, how does he do? You know, there are definitely intangibles that you look at, you know. I mean, I go back and the great thing about today is I YouTube these guys. I'll YouTube
right.
them, and they get in the hunt. I'll go back and look at them, and I'll look at their mannerisms. I'll look at, you know, like Paul Casey, for example. Now, Paul Casey is a hell of a player. Would I trade careers with Paul Casey? Absolutely, okay? I don't know, what's he made, $30 million, $40 million? Mm-hmm. World-class player. I look at him, and his numbers are great. He does everything well. And, you know, I'll sit on sets, and people will go, you know, he's got a good chance to win a major. I'm like, no, he does not. you know, he might be in the hunt, but the minute he, and this, I said this at the U.S. Open, he was in the hunt after 36 holes or 54 holes, and right. I said, you know, what, he, just something to look for. He'll come out, and he'll slow down, and he'll get very analytical, and he'll stop waggling, he'll play slower, and he'll shoot 75, because that's what he's done his entire career when he's had a chance to win a major championship. Now, you know, if I were his teacher or coach, I would say, listen, waggling is important. It keeps you loose, okay? Slower is not better, okay? Right. Faster. We've tried slower. It doesn't work. I want you to pick a target and go for it, all right? We're shooting threes as fast as we can here, all right? Yep. That's how you play this game. Mm-hmm. Look and shoot. And I would say, you know, that's how we do this. I mean, yeah, is he good enough to win a major? Absolutely. Mentally, can he handle it? Well, he hasn't yet. And so you, when he gets in the hunt and you start considering him, you think, well, he's not my favorite because of that reason.
Right. Interesting. So this podcast will come out next Tuesday. We'll be a couple days away from the Open. What do you think people should expect from the course? What have you heard?
Well, the course, you know, it's lauded by the players because it's fair. The fairways are some of the flattest in Open Championship golf. You know, the sand dunes are up here, and then the fairways are in between the sand dunes, and they're flat. It's supposed to be fairly warm next week. So the course will be running and it'll be fast.
We like that. We're big carnage guys.
Yeah. You like carnage?
Yes,
yeah.
Big time.
A little
yeah.
bit, yeah.
Yeah. I like carnage at the Open Championship. I've played in some of the worst weather ever at the Open Championship, and I have lots of fun carnage stories about that day. But what do they expect? They expect Brooks Koepka to come out and do, you know, his last 10 majors have been silly. I mean, he kind of sneaks in because he doesn't say much. He right. doesn't tweet much.
Yep.
You know, he's not huge presence on social media. But, you know, he was 11th at the Masters this year. He won the U.S. Open. He was 4th at the PGA last year. The last time he played the Open Championship, he was 10th. Well, he's miles better than he was the last time he played the Open Championship.
Right.
So, you know, he could come back and win by 5. It would surprise nobody. I mean, what he did at the U.S. Open, statistically, nobody has ever done that, okay? Nobody has ever hit the golf ball as well as he hit it at the U.S. Open. Dustin Johnson's a big question mark, you know? Well, is he going to come back? I mean, it right. broke my heart. I picked him to win the Masters, and then, you know, he broke his leg, or almost did. Rory, you know, he's a little bit out of sorts. You know, his game's in shambles. You know, John Rahm might just be the player we were talking about who's not going to be motivated by money. So I'd be looking at Sergio Garcia and John Rahm. I would be looking at Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler's close to the best player on the tour in every single category. Scrambling's so important at an Open Championship, and he's a, you know, he's Tiger-esque with his ability to scramble. And, you know, I can't wait to watch Jordan Spieth to see what he does for an encore after his walk-off hole bunker shot at Harbor.
Right.
Right?
Oh,
know, that was Justin Thomas had the best line there. He said, did
Jordan
you
doing Jordan things?
That's a great line, right?
Great line.
I mean, I think if I'm Jordan Spieth, that's like my calling card.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Yep. You know,
no doubt about it.
Jordan doing Jordan things.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I'm stealing that. You know, I'll give him credit, and yeah. I do, you know, but that was really good. Jordan doing Jordan things.
So we got a couple rapid fires, and then we'll let you go.
Okay.
Our first one, we asked pretty much everybody this. What's your go-to curse word after you hit a terrible shot?
You know, the king of curse words, isn't it? Starts with an F.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you know? Yeah.
That's been the most common.
And followed by me, you know. You know, yeah. Boom, me. I mean, one time I was in the hunt at San Diego, last group, playing with Peter Jacobson, 11th hole. I just hit this wounded duck 3-iron out to the right. If I'd had a shotgun, I'd have shot at mid-flight. And the camera zoomed into my face, and I didn't know it, you know. And I gave it a, you know, F me, you know, to myself.
Right.
Not loud.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just to myself. My mom calls that night. She was like, you know, I'm still your mother. I raised you. And the whole world watched you say, fuck me, you know. So, you know, you can't beat, you know, it's the way that it ends with CK. You know, it's just that emphatic.
You can't,
you know,
beat it.
Can't beat it,
can't.
You know.
Yeah, Danielle Kang said, she was like, I just always say, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Oh,
and she said
one.
She answers herself and either says, depending on what mood she's in, Yes, I am kidding you. Like that.
I love that girl.
She's great.
She's awesome.
Oh, she was so good on our podcast.
I love that girl.
And then Patty said he never swears out there. So we get all kinds of different
Patty
reactions.
Says he never swears.
That's what he says.
He says he's completely against
it. He's raised not to curse out there.
Good for him. I'm a little worried about men with no vices, though. But yes.
Absolutely.
Always.
He's got to have a vice.
Yes.
He can't be that perfect.
I know.
He doesn't cuss. He doesn't drink. An Irishman that doesn't drink, right?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Seems unlikely.
Yeah.
I'm a St. Louis guy. I'm from St. Charles.
I was born in St. Louis.
Do you have any thoughts on Emo's Pizza?
No, I have no thoughts. I left there when I was two or three.
So. Oh, okay.
Right. I'm sorry. I wasn't eating pizza then. But, right. You know, when I get back, I'll have to give Emo's a try.
There you go.
You know, sorry to let you down.
It's that classic thin, thin crust St. Louis pizza.
I go to Kansas City and have Winstead's cheeseburgers, though, and Stroud's fried chicken, you know, which is. You know, not too far away.
Well, Tommy Watson's a big Kansas City
guy. That's right, yes, he is.
Last one, do you ever think, yeah, that's right, after you spin somebody into a little web of statistics?
Yeah, that's right.
Just like, I got him that time. I definitely got him.
Yeah, more times than not, you always think, you know how TV is, it happens and it's fast or whatever, and you think, I could have done a little better. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, by the time I finished digging, you know, I always say I don't do research to support my opinions. I do research to discover my opinions. So by the time I spit it out, I'm convinced of it, you know. Okay. And if so, yeah, I finished. I'm like, that's pretty much the way that is.
That's a fact. Everything I said is just a fact.
No, it's just my opinion, but that's pretty much what's going to happen.
I love it. All right, Brandon Chambly, we really appreciate you sitting down with us.
It was a blast. Thanks for having me, guys. You guys do a great show.
We really appreciate it. Thanks. You, sir.
That interview with Brandon Chambly was brought to you by SimpliSafe. Think of the million things you do every day to keep your family safe. This weekend, Riggs, you're going to like this. I buckled up when I was in an Uber. Everyone I was with looked at me like I was a crazy person, but I was the safest person in that Uber.
Incredibly
safe.
So
shout out to you. A SimpliSafe home security system is another fantastic way to keep yourself safe. It's super easy, too. Each SimpliSafe system is a security arsenal expertly engineered to protect your home. You can set up the system yourself in under an hour. There's no drilling or hard wiring required, and you save hundreds on installation fees. SimpliSafe has a super fast wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. 24/7 alarm monitoring is just $14.99 a month. No hidden fees, no annoying gotchas. That's it. No long-term contracts either. SimpliSafe will never lock you in like other alarm companies do. Feel free to cancel anytime. You also get a 60-day risk-free trial to try the system out for your home and see if you like it. I can't recommend SimpliSafe enough to protect your family. Right now, go to simplisafe.com/barstool. That's BARSTOOL. If you order today, you'll get an extra 10% off, plus a free keychain remote and free shipping. Go now to simplisafe.com/barstool.
Well, I think that we are all on board with being, I might be in love with Brandon Chambly.
Here's what's going to happen, and it might not happen, but if it doesn't happen, then I'm going to be confused. Every time we have someone on this podcast, people come away liking them even more. It happens with every single person we've had. I think it's going to happen to Brandon Chambly, too. People hate Chambly, but now once they hear him kicking it, chilling with us, I think they're going to love him.
I could not be a bigger fan of when we basically asked him, you know, do you say in your own head, like, yeah, that's right, bitch, when you kind of dominate somebody in an argument? And he said basically, like, when I'm done saying something, there's so much behind it that's just how it is.
It was so good. It's not even that. Then I was like, so you mean it's a fact? He's like, no. That's just how it is.
My opinion, but, like, that's just what it is. Okay.
A sneaky part of the interview that I liked was when he said he doesn't trust a man who doesn't have any vices.
Yes.
I think that's a very smart thing to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. So, Brandon Chambly, man, people can hate on him and you can do what you want, but he was a cool guy when he was in the office. He was very into Barstool, very into what we had going on. He was shocked. He loved the office.
He's just either a really good bullshitter or he's just a really genuine guy that likes what we're doing.
It's true. He could have pulled the wool over our eyes. I don't think that's what happened, but if he did, I don't care.
We got to spend about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes with him, and we like I said, we could have gone to a bar. I think he wanted to just go to a bar, get a glass of scotch, and talk to that guy for like 5 or 6 hours.
That's what he said. He said, you guys got anything to drink in here? We'll start telling different stories.
That's exactly what he said. He'll be on the live from the Open Championship coverage all week, which I'm very excited to watch now and be like, that's my guy, my buddy.
Best friends.
Best friends, BFFs in the office, no big deal. Open Championship, is, do you think it's the most fun tournament to watch?
Yes. Because it would be the Masters if the Masters gave us more than 45 minutes of coverage every day.
Yeah, from a pure golf standpoint, just like the golf shots, I think it's the most fun golf tournament to watch because you just never know what you're going to get on any given shot. The Masters has all of the hype. It's the first major of the year, so you're looking forward to it for 9 months. And it just, you know, it has the history. You know all the holes unbelievably well. But from a pure watching golf shots, seeing what happens to the ball, seeing where it bounces, watching a ball that looks like it's going to go into the middle of the green, catch a hill, bounce off the side of a slope, and end up in some horrific bunker where the guy has to play backwards is fantastic.
It's fantastic. They're doing I was watching a little bit of the coverage today, and they're doing the bunker cams right now, just watching the dudes in there. It's a very cool thing to do. And I agree with you. I love the Open.
Yeah, and I like to when they show – I'm always a big fan of when they show the camera view – from the green looking back towards the tee and you can't see anything. It just looks like fairway.
Yeah.
And then when they show it from the other view, there's bunkers everywhere.
Everywhere.
Because they're bunkers. You literally can't fucking see them because the faces are so steep.
Yep.
You can't see the fucking bunkers. I love it. I've been going down the rabbit hole of watching all of the – so Golf Channel has all of the – basically the chronicles of the Open Champion stuff.
Okay.
From the guys that have won at Royal Birkdale.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I know the course really well at this point. I can't wait to watch him play it now. I'm like very jacked up to be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's where Watson hit it.
Oh,
okay, Riggsy.
It's also the Open Championship. I almost said British Open. It's a very different viewing experience for us in the States because it's tees off at like 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week, but it's one of those where you always convince yourself, yeah, I'm just going to stay up.
That's what's going to happen Friday and Saturday for a lot of people is we're out boozing. Let's just stay up and watch the Open Championship. I mean, we said it last week. It's never a good idea, but it's a fun goal to try and accomplish.
Yeah, and you wake up, you know, at 9 a.m. on a couch or something with your legs, like, over the armrest.
Usually, like, beer in your hand.
Yes, yeah, so you don't remember a single shot. You're like, oh, shit, I tried to stay up. So it's Open Championship week. We had one of the best in the game in to talk about it. Pretty damn good episode. I'm very jacked up to watch the golf.
Yep. I'm going to... I don't know if we were going to do picks, but I'm picking Zach Johnson to win it again, just so everybody knows.
What?
Yes.
Whoa.
That's my guy.
I'm a little surprised by it.
I don't care.
Who am I going to pick? I was planning on, so I have a bunch of golf pools that I'm in.
Yep.
So I was going to do all of my my work tomorrow night, which is like 5 minutes of jumping on like a couple different websites and just seeing how people have played. I'm going to say Phil.
Okay.
Phil, he basically should have won last year.
Yep.
He would have beat everyone else by a million shots.
If Henrik Stenson just didn't exist, yeah.
Just didn't exist. Phil's a big storyline guy. He's got the brother on the bag now. Bones is covering the tournament.
Ooh.
For Golf Channel, making his debut. It's just, for whatever reason, fucking Phil hasn't won, you know, in 4 years. He's going to pull something out of his ass.
Could we get Bones doing the post-tournament interview on the 18th green if Phil wins?
It's just too good to not happen.
How great would that be?
How jealous are you that I picked Phil now?
Not really, because Zach Johnson's going to win, and he's my guy, because he shows up when you least expect it.
He does. He definitely
but
does.
I don't know if that's how it would shake out, where like Phil puts out to win, and then the post-round interview right on the green, doing the Dottie Pepper, David Faraday. If it's Bones, that would be so good.
It would be. Would it be awkward?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It would be so awkward. If I would love Phil just be like, see what you're missing.
Like Bones trying to be like, I'm so happy for Phil, but everyone's like, dude, like, what are you talking about?
I would like to see after the putt if Bones rushed on and like stole the high five from his brother. Just like, it's me.
He got in there for the emotional hug and all that. It was just Bones.
Or if Phil accidentally hugs Bones instead.
You just yeah, habit.
Now I want that to happen. I still think Zach's going to win, but I want Phil to win for that awkwardness.
All right. Those are our picks. Open Championship week. Enjoy. Hit it hard.
Hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing. It's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances. Living large. I hit it. People would have given up by now.
now. All the rough I've seen, these ups and downs, somehow I just keep on playing through. So all you critics, pull up a chair at the winner's circle soon. I'll be there with a high five and a smile for you. Hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it. People trying to tell me how to live my life. These lawyers and strings spending money like my ex-wives. Sure, I gamble and I drink and smoke three packs a day. Hell, ain't country music supposed to be this way? It's from the heart, man. I hit it hard, man. So far, man.
So far.
I hit it hard. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man.
So far.
No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I'll keep hitting it hard, man. How about you?